Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for Memorial Day weekend. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
And welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, first things first, I want to tell y'all did an outstanding job in the last 2 weeks. I want to thank y'all again for filling in for me. If you people have not listened to those shows, please do so, because Tim Catherine did great work. Rashad Taylor filling in did great work. Peanut Politics, Keith McCants, did excellent for his first time on. And then I know we had guests throughout, General Poitras and Tina Coggin from Alabama and Arkansas did excellent job. So thanks, and listen to that, folks. Also, for tonight's show, we're going to talk a lot about Alabama, because their elections are coming up on Tuesday. We're going to have congressional candidate Sheila Smoot on in just a little bit. And then also Martin Weinberg, who's been on before, is going to come on and give us just a lay of the land all over in Alabama. But there's things to cover before then. And one that really caught my eye was over in South Carolina, this governor's candidate blogger scandal. Just to lay this thing out quickly, Nikki Haley, leading Republican gubernatorial candidate, has been accused by a supporter of having an affair. This guy's a blogger, and it's probably going to kind of do her candidacy in, and she had all these endorsements lining up, and quite a scandal. Tim, what do you make of this?
Well, first of all, this particular gentleman, this blogger, his blog seemed to be the place to go politically on the net in South Carolina. Here's another interesting thing about this guy. He used to work for Governor Sanford, which I find to be a little delicious side item. Apparently, this guy has kept taped phone calls and just all kinds of emails and practically everything that she's ever sent him, almost as if he knew this day would come. Now, he claims he's releasing it now because some of her opponents have the information and we're going to do it. He claims to be a supporter, and he's releasing this in advance of them doing it. This has got to be a blow to Nikki Haley. Here's a woman that came out of nowhere, was endorsed by Sarah Palin, was endorsed by Jenny Sanford, for crying out loud. And now this. I don't, what's going on in that state, Catherine?
Well, I don't think she came out of nowhere. I'm pretty sure she served in the state legislature. She's been a rising star in South Carolina politics for a while. I actually met her a couple years ago at a Women in Politics forum at Kennesaw State University. With she was there with Lisa Borders and Jane Kidd, just talking about the role of women in politics. And she was very impressive. I'm not one to say that about Republicans. But I hadn't really kept track of her, but she was very dynamic, and I thought, well, she'll probably go far, but she seems like maybe she won't go so far now. Or maybe she went too far.
Yeah, I love the part that this guy's a supporter. What's the old saying with friends like this? Who needs enemies?
Exactly.
This is really going to sabotage her campaign because, you know, this would hurt in any campaign. But then in the political environment of South Carolina right now, coming off the heels of Mark Sanford's scandal, which was, you know, just one of the worst scandals in recent years of a sexual nature, that's not good timing. And also, Catherine, don't you think it hurts a woman? I mean, it's unfair, but don't you think it hurts a woman that's accused
of an extramarital affair more than a man in politics?
I don't know that it hurts more. It sounds like she's denying it, which is bad. If he's got, you know, evidence, then I think it's always a mistake to let it linger. You know, I think we talked about this last week about one of the things we were talking about, not an extramarital affair, but I just think that it's better to just get it over with, you know, just say it was a mistake, I did it. You know, hopefully the evidence won't need to come out. Let's move on. We have more important things to deal with for our state. But instead, it sounds like she's denying it, and I just think that's it. It just gives it more, you know, more fuel to the fire, so to speak.
Yeah,
I guess you're right.
Out.
You know, it's probably harder for women to get over to overcome something like that than men. It's unfortunate, and hopefully that will change in the coming years.
Yeah, and I guess I'm here. This came out about 2 weeks before the election. Just, I mean, almost a perfect amount of time to do you in, because
yep.
It's enough time for it really to, you know, get where everybody knows about it, but certainly not enough time for people to, you know, forgive and forget. So, and then here it gets, becomes the next question. Who is the beneficiary, Tim?
Well, that would have to be Andre Bauer, the lieutenant governor. There was a poll come out right after this broke. She was sitting at 31%. He's sitting at 21%, with others in various numbers behind that. It's pretty obvious in a multi-candidate field that there's going to be a runoff, and this type thing, if there is, of course, a runoff, this thing really will have time to fester, and so it's got to be Andre Bauer.
Yeah, I guess the next thing question becomes, given that this is another Republican scandal, the Republicans are in charge in South Carolina, this is not going to be a big year for incumbents, although, you know, a lot of times you just rather have that I beside your name, but it's just not a year where it's good to be the incumbent. It's better to be a challenger in some cases. Do you think this could somehow, no matter who the Republican nominee is, Catherine, could this help the Democratic nominee?
I think it does. I think that South Carolina Republicans are pretty damaged right now. Over the last couple of years, they've just, you know, with Sanford and now this. I mean, I think for a party that claims to be, you know, the party of family values and ethics and morality, to have these kind of scandals crop up, I think it does a lot of damage to the brand. I just think that's the way it is. People begin to lose confidence in the values that they thought they were fighting for.
Yeah. Any word on what the husband said about this? I mean, has there been any statement by him?
I haven't seen anything.
Tim?
No, I have heard nothing about that. And we're still talking about South Carolina. I'm not sure how you knock the Republicans out if they don't start losing races on account of some of this stuff, because this is like some sort of a nut house soap opera or something going on over there. I mean, hey, it's not enough that the male governor of the state's doing this. Let's get the top female candidate in on the action. You know, it's unreal. But as far as the general election in November, you know, I don't think it's going to hurt the Republicans that much over there, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina was one of the first states in the South, really the first state in the South to go Republican, if you will. And then the upcountry where Bob Jones University is, Greenville, South Carolina, probably one of the most Republican areas in the country as far as a, you know, larger metropolis area. Greenville's probably one of the most Republican, you know, decent-sized cities in America. So those roots are going to be kind of hard to overcome. But, I mean, you know, in 1998, Jim Hodges won a race that nobody expected he could win.
So, I mean, could it be that, you know, he'd catch lightning in a bottle? The trick is the general trend in 98 was pretty Democratic nationwide, whereas this year you won't have that helping out. Jim? Or Catherine? Any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I just think that, I mean, I could be wrong, but it just seems like there's an awful lot of damage there. And, you know, do people, I'm not saying that people are going to vote for the Democrat, but they might just say, forget it, I'm staying home.
I don't think in South Carolina it hurts the brand as much as it hurts the individuals. If Jenny Sanford wanted to run for any office in South Carolina as a Republican right now, she'd probably be the top statewide vote getter in the history of that state, for instance. So, but her husband couldn't get elected dog catcher right now. But apparently Jim DeMint's going to stroll the victory, you know. So I don't really think it's going to hurt the Republican brand in South Carolina. It's just too strong of a Republican state, and the statewide Democratic Party right now is not among the strongest.
Well,
again,
so that,
I'm sorry to say.
And that's the thing that's just a shame, you know, because if the Democratic Party was strong and they could take advantage of this. This is, you know, this is why we always talk about building a party from the, you know, roots up, because every opportunity that you have, you can take advantage of. But if you haven't done that work, it makes it that much harder.
Well, and this, I doubt that this is an indictment of South Carolina, you know, Democratic leaders. I think this is just a fact of the state's general trend is just so Republican, and it's been that way for probably, what do you think, three decades, Tim?
Oh, yeah, easy. I mean, well, Strom Thurmond switched parties in the early 1960s. So, you know, this sort of thing's been going on in South Carolina for a long, long time. And it's got to be easily the strongest Republican state now in the South, or I think it is.
Yeah, we could analyze a lot of that, but we will do more South Carolina talk next week. Now, I think right now we're ready to welcome on our first guest, a congressional candidate from Alabama, Ms. Sheila Smoot. Welcome, Ms.
Hello.
Smoot.
Well, hi, how are you?
Yes, you're on the Kudzu Vine. I'm David, and you're on with Tim Shiflett and Catherine Smith.
Hello, and welcome.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi, thank you for having me. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be on your show tonight.
Yes, well, Ms. Smoot, first question I'd like to ask, because a lot of people are familiar with you and your campaign, but some people aren't. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am Sheila Smoot. I'm currently in elected office as a county commissioner here in the great state of Alabama, in the state's largest county out of 67. I'm originally from Flint, Michigan, and a Michigan State grad. My parents are from Sumter County, Alabama, and they left their home state of Alabama to work for General Motors. And then, of course, I'm one of those kids that said, why are we living in Michigan, and decided to vote back here where it was a little warmer. And so I got a grand opportunity to do that back in 1992, and I was a television investigative reporter and anchor here for several of the TV stations, and I also do radio as well, and I did a piece called On Your Side, and the On Your Side piece is working for the little guy, consumer advocate, fighting for what is right, and that catapulted me and this state, and I was a little on the, you know, I had a little edge to me here, you know, I get my southern roots mixed up with my Midwestern ones sometimes, and I guess I didn't come in as a Southern Belle originally, and it was just a little different flavor, a little different style for the folks here, and it just kind of took off from there, and I've been very excited that the people of Alabama have embraced me ever since, because I'm a hometown girl by way of Michigan, and it's just been a great run so far. So I've been involved with the State Democratic Executive Committee, which I'm on. I was a two-time delegate in 2004 and 2008 to the Democratic National Convention with the Alabama Democratic Conference, and have been a Democrat all my life, so I'm excited about that part of it too.
Yes, an investigative reporter on TV. We had a candidate in Georgia that's been on our show a number of times, Dale Cardwell, that was his background.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
I guess you may know of Dale.
I've heard Dale's name, definitely.
Yes. Now, being an investigative reporter, what kind of special background does that bring to politics?
Well, you know, I think what it does is you don't take the first answer. You basically say, yeah, well, that might be the case from your perspective, but let's check it out. So I'm a researcher. I go deeper than the average person. I ask more questions. I definitely don't take the first answer. I want to get all the facts, and I want to check out the facts, and I want to make sure they're accurate. So I think the background has really helped me. In fact, it has. I'm the reporter that actually got some cemetery legislation here on perpetual care. We had a dilapidated cemetery with hundreds and hundreds of graves, and the gentleman was going, and basically when you show up on site for burial, somebody else was in your plot, and because you're grieving and those kinds of things, he says, we'll take it or leave it. I mean, who's going to turn around on that? It was called Shadow on Cemetery. It's now called House Bill 321 in the state of Alabama, where people who own plots and cemeteries have to make sure that they honor perpetual care contracts. That was the first piece of legislation without me being elected that I pushed through by way of a television news camera and investigation. I've done all kinds of stories in regard to helping people get their just due without having to hire a lawyer, many of which can't afford. And also just the fact that if you have a problem, somebody ought to be able to sit down with you to help you solve it. Too many times people say, well, you know what, that's not big enough of a case for me to take if they're lawyers, or well, you know, I don't know if that's going to work, but you know, so many people get turned around, and I'm the type of person that's going to listen to you, whether it's at a grocery store, on the street, at church, or wherever. I'm not ever going to not stop and say, hey, you know, let me hear a little more. Give me your information, your name and number, and let me check it out. And I will try my best to get you some assistance or find somebody who can. And it's kind of the little guy always gets the runaround. I'm not the person that's going to do that to you.
Yes. I'm going to ask one more question before I pass this thing around to Catherine and Tim about your background. And that would be, you've been on the Jefferson County Commission. What kind of special experiences will that bring to Congress?
Well, the county has gone through some turmoil, as most counties have. I sit on the National Association County Officials Steering Committee for Community Economic Development. I'm the past president of the National Association Black County Officials, which is about 6,000 members as well. And my experience with county government means I understand how the rubber meets the road. We are administrators on a day-to-day basis. We got 45 departments, again, out of 67 counties. This is the state's largest. I've run the road department in our county for 4 years. I was over workforce and economic and community development, which allowed me to help to build data operation centers and senior citizen centers, schools, and walking tracks and roads and bridges with community development block grant monies and other federal funds. I take care of my seasoned citizens, which are my seniors. I'm currently over that department with a $12 million budget. And I'm over IT, and I'm the vice chair for technology for the National Association of County Officials. So the county portion of my life has provided me excellent opportunities, and with the way the economy is going now, it's also provided me with an opportunity on how to streamline government so that we can survive and make sure people have their jobs, but also at the same time make sure people have service from government.
Yeah. Now, before I pass this thing over to Catherine Smith, Tim, should I set a number of limit number of questions that Catherine can ask about Michigan stuff?
Yeah, you did notice, David, there's four people on here, and two of them are from Michigan. So just say it.
I'm just kidding around. Catherine's from Michigan as well, but born like you were there.
Wonderful.
But
what part of Michigan is she from?
I am from Ann Arbor. I'm a fifth generation Ann Arborite, and I just got back from there. I just flew in, just arrived 15 minutes ago.
So did you go to University of Michigan?
I did not, but my father was a professor there. I went to Grand Valley.
Oh, well, I understand.
I went to Grand Valley State, which is over on the western side of the state.
Yes, it is. Grand Valley State's a good school.
It was a lot different when I was there. It was Grand Valley. Mm-hmm. Colleges when I was there, now it's university. But anyway, Well, I know that Democrats from Michigan are very strong and very vocal, and I can tell from just the few minutes that I've heard you talking that you are in that tradition, and I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm also really impressed that you're talking about internet accessibility for your constituents, because I had a long conversation with some of my friends about that this weekend, because in Michigan, we were in Ypsilanti this morning, and Ypsilanti, Michigan, has internet access for their citizens. And we tried, while Mayor Franklin was mayor of Atlanta, she tried to push through some general access for internet here in Atlanta. And well, I think she was stopped by some of the telecommunications companies. So I wanted to ask you how the reception to that kind of issue is going in Alabama.
It's funny you mention that the big telecommunications companies do try to stifle your growth if you're talking about technology and connecting everybody in that manner. Certainly, I've been trying to do things in regard to technology here, and I've been one of the major companies, and I've been fighting them, and they've been fighting me, and it's been going on a year. In fact, I've hand-delivered from our office a letter to this particular company every week for over a year, and they have not responded, because I just want a track record of how they treat the citizens. And it really is something that they've been doing. I don't know what the problem is with these companies, but let me tell you what I experienced, Catherine, as I talk about the 12 counties in the 7th Congressional District of Alabama. In Wilcox County, which is the third poorest county in America, not in Alabama, in America, I talked to a lady, a professional woman, actually, and she just got dial-up. And I was just floored. I'm traveling on 2-lane highways that should be 4 lanes. I have 2 cell phones, and neither one of them work on any given day when I'm in those areas. And, you know, with the way things are going with all of the technology, these folks are 20 and 30 years behind, and it shouldn't be that way in 2010 or any year for that matter. So I'm a real proponent of technology, especially with the way the Obama administration have been pushing the stimulus package and the broadband piece. We need that desperately in the 7th Congressional District. But, again, I'm prepared to do whatever I have to do to make that a reality. And it's unfortunate because many of the folks in this district don't have an opportunity to apply for jobs and those things, because everything, as you know, folks, we're in the .gov, .net, .com era. And these folks, you know, they just don't have the capacity because nobody is providing it. And so I'm willing to do that.
Well, and I think that there can be an argument that internet access in rural communities is even more important than it is in metropolitan areas, because, you know, I mean, it's important for everyone, but in metropolitan areas, like I live in Atlanta, it's not so hard for me to drive across town to do something, but I mean, not that I don't really value the internet for everyone, but in the rural counties, there's a lot of advantages and a lot of opportunities for work and employment and entrepreneurship if there's, you know, valid, you know, viable internet access. And, I was a huge supporter of Governor Howard Dean when he was running for president, and that was one of the issues that he really fought for. So I admire you, and I think it's great that you're fighting for that. And I think that I suspect that it will have to come around. I mean, one way or another, these telecommunications companies are going to have to come around and recognize that they're losing potential customers, and hopefully they'll you know, recognize that. Well, what are the other issues that are important to your constituents? What are people telling you that they're concerned about? Obviously, we know some of them, but, you know, if you could just share with us what you're thinking.
Yes, and I will, and I'll go right back to your technology, what you were talking about in regard to technology. You know, you made a very valid point about the jobs being online now, but what about education online? I mean, for those folks who can't make the trek to a university, online may be the best way. What about saving money. You know how much you save when you rent a car online as opposed to getting in and going to the counter? I mean, the plane tickets are booked online. I mean, just the basic things, banking online, the basic life things are online now, and most people in rural communities can't get to it. And it's unfortunate because, you know, as they struggle with their incomes and things like that, there's a lot of cost-saving measures in utilizing, as you all know, the Internet. It just is, you know, if you can go online, you can save money. So they don't have those options. So I just want to let you know there's a lot of things that are attached to that. As many of us utilize the online, the technology in order to do things, and including phone things as well, and blogging and all the things, there are just some basic life needs that technology can provide. Some of the other things, Catherine, and that I really am just floored. I go back to Wilcox County because it's where it starts for me and work my way back up to the county where I am. Wilcox County, the children get on the school bus at like 5 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning. They take a ferry over the water, and they all, it's four times a day, maybe three times a day that the ferry runs. If they miss this ferry, it takes them about an hour, hour and a half to drive around the school. Well, you and I know, they're not going to do it. With the gas prices being as high and the poverty in those areas, they're not going to do it. It's called G's Bend, Camden, Alabama to G's Bend, one of the poorest communities in our state and in our country. And I just can't believe it. And if we build a bridge by utilizing the Corps of Engineers and federal dollars and come together on that, we build a bridge over that water, it'll take 7 to 10 minutes. And part of the reasoning that I found out was part of it used to was funding. But back in the, I want to say it was the 70s, late 70s, they wanted to name the bridge Martin Luther King. You know, that was part of the Civil Rights, Voting Rights Act, and Wilcox County was part of that. A lot of folks know Selma and Dallas County. Selma, Alabama was where it all went down, but not, that was part of it, but also Wilcox County. And do you know, from one of the photographers who shot those pictures in the 1960s and the 1970s told me just during the Bloody Sunday March in March of this year, that the reason why they stopped the bridge was actually funded, was actually going to come over the water, and they had a dispute about the naming of the bridge because some of the residents wanted to name it the Martin Luther King Bridge. I was floored. I said, "You got to be kidding me." He says, "No, I'm not." And so, you know, they have not really engaged folks in the Army Corps of Engineers to go in and maybe get back to that. But also I'm finding in those areas, Perry County and Sumter County, where my family's from, and in Marengo County, that there are some big landowners, big timber boys, and they don't want to see that land. I call it the billionaire ball club. They don't want to see it spoiled. And so I tell you, you'd be surprised how many hunting lodges there are in the Black Belt, and they're privately owned because people own tons and tons of land, and they don't want industry that can help folks get jobs there. They don't want the schools to be there, and in regard to educating folks, you know, they're not really engaged in that. And in my journey, and I just don't say my race because this race is not a race, it's a journey for me, I've just seen some things that are just quite painful and disturbing at best. And folks are hurting and they need help. And that's just one area. Critical care, health care. And Choctaw County, Butler, Alabama. Those folks have to travel an hour and a half to get to a doctor. They don't have a doc in the box like we enjoy. They don't have the hospital, so they have to get in a car if you're suffering from any major illness and hope you can make it there by utilizing an ambulance that can get you an hour to 45 minutes to somebody who can maybe help you out and just stabilize you. Then we got to move you again to get you to a hospital that that can get you well. And it sounds very primitive, doesn't it? But what has happened, people in these areas have been left behind and left out. And I told them, I said, hey, we've got to come together. We've got to get an action plan, not just a Black Belt Commission with no funding, not another black belt plan and not another photo op. We need some service, and I'm prepared to do that.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to pass it over to Tim now. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Tim. Yes, ma'am. You have talked about something that we have talked about a lot in Georgia. You've been a supporter of light rail development. And I'm curious, does that have a realistic chance of happening in the near future in Alabama?
Well, that's a very good question because, as you know, Tim, Georgia and Mississippi and everybody else in the corridor except for Alabama has gotten in on the study and the funding on the study. And our current governor, who is a Republican, Bob Riley, would not put up the money to join in with Georgia and Mississippi. And I wanted to say the other one was Louisiana, to assist in putting together this corridor, this study to promote light rail. And for whatever reason, again, it goes back to who's trying to keep their thumb on the people of 7th CD and Alabamians in general. And that rail, Tim, as you know, runs right through the 7th CD and would provide all kinds of opportunities in regard to jobs and other opportunities, and certainly for those who want to travel at the speed of light in my world, would be able to move folks around. And for those people who want to stay in Georgia, Mississippi, or Alabama and don't want to move their homes, but, we could share, do some job sharing and maybe do some regional things together if we had that system. I am a proponent of the light rail. I was touted for trying to create commuter rail system here because we have a traffic problem here in the city of Birmingham in our 280 corridor. And, some people who are in leadership positions here do not want this particular state to prosper and grow. They want to keep things the same. They're afraid of letting outsiders in, if you will, and I'm hoping that we can work together with Georgia and Mississippi and the rest of the corridor to change that.
And one more question. Of course, even though your district is not on the Gulf, Alabama is one of five states that touches the Gulf of Mexico, and I'm sure that as a congressional candidate you've been asked a lot in the last month or so about what happened down there, and I was just wondering if you would like to share with us your thoughts on what's going on in the Gulf.
Yes, I've been to Gulf Shores many times. Our beaches are extremely popular and extremely beautiful, and now they're extremely in danger. It's very unfortunate when British Petroleum, BP, to us, known as BP, knew there were some problems. And just like the levees breaking in New Orleans and Katrina, the federal government's got to do a better job of making sure that these billionaire companies take care of the environment and that they take care of their operation so that this does not happen. I do remember very well when the Exxon Valdez, I remember that like it was yesterday, and I remember the government telling us this would not happen again because we're going to regulate these folks. We're going to keep our thumb on them. We're going to make sure that things are done properly. And if it takes them spending a few million dollars, well, heck, they're making a few billion. And so, I go back, Tim, to, folks who get, who make mega money, if you will, the mega companies, they still have a duty. They still have a duty to take care of the people's needs and the environment because they're making money off of that environment. And so we need to challenge these companies to make sure that if they're going to do things that may help us in our day-to-day lives, that they still have to keep things on the up and up, and they've got to play it safe, and we can't let them continue to slide by when we know they're in violation and some inspector turns their head and keeps walking away. That is unacceptable. So I hope this time, Tim, as we continue to try to find a solution to plug this week, And as BP said, you know, we are really afraid. I'm really afraid that BP is just now admitting their fear. Because if they're doing it, trust me, others are too. So right now we need to go ahead and get prepared to tell and warn these other companies, we are going to be checking you all out. Because if it happened once, which Exxon Valdez didn't happen, they said it would never happen again, there's a potential there. So I'm looking forward to the cleanup, looking forward to a solution. And certainly Alabamians, we've got our fingers crossed. We're praying that we can survive this.
Excellent answer. David?
Yes, Ms. Smith, one more question.
Yes.
And that was about endorsements. You've been endorsed by a number of organizations. I know Left in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
our friend Sherry endorsed your campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You've been endorsed today by some of the papers. Of the endorsements you've gotten, which one are you the most proud of?
That's a good question. The endorsement by the bloggers, David. because it's where the rubber meets the road. You know, you guys are the way for the future. And for those people who don't participate in blogging and those people who don't participate, shame on you. Because in 10 years, we're going to all have a different conversation that all of them would have wished they had with you 10 years to this 10 years. But in to answer your question, the one I'm most proud of, honestly, is the one that's not documented, and that's the one from my seniors and veterans, because we have a big veteran and senior population here. I'm over senior services. And I tell you, you're talking about going to a senior picnic that I just came from last week, and I warned my commission. I said, hey, if you come out to the park, you know, you're probably going to get ran over by my seniors. You know, they are some spunky people. I am so honored to be representing those folks. You know, they vote. It is sacred. It is sacred to them. And, you know, to sit down, to have a chat with a 70-year-old and a chat with a child at 7, what a different world. You know, getting an endorsement by just everyday people works for me because it's what I've been doing for years. It's what I did before I was elected. For me, that's a big deal. One of the other endorsements that I'm honored to have was that by the Demopolis Times. They did a co-endorsement. They're a small town newspaper, and they've got some issues. And a lot of folks said, "What about the big papers?" I said, "I've dealt with big media all my career. It's, you know, a lot of the candidates were not paying attention to this particular small town in Demopolis, Alabama. And I've been down there so much, I probably should live there." But I was kind of shocked to get that one, that they would even engage, because oftentimes they don't. And I asked for their endorsement. I asked them to try to get back to engaging their population in rural communities and to exercising their power there. So I was honored to get that the other day. But for the most part, honestly, Dave, you came on board. You've certainly been out there with us, all of the Minister of Truth, Progressive Electorate, all of you guys, Daily Coast. You know, it doesn't really get any better than that from my perspective, because that's where the rubber meets the road for us as we go into this new wave of campaigning and this new wave of technology and engaging today's voters. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you. And final thing, if somebody hears this and wants to get on board with your campaign, how can they get a hold of you to volunteer, give you some money, everything else?
Thank you so much. SmootForCongress.com. S is in Sam, M is in Mary, OOT is in Tom. SmootForCongress.com. And folks, you know we're in the South, and June 1st, it's going to be hot. So please donate $20, $10, or $5 or $10 or $50. We've got to buy water, and we've got to buy gas, because you know that it's, the spill is really impacting gasoline prices here, and in our rural counties, you know, it's really tough. And all of my folks, honestly, they're volunteers. You know, we don't buy votes. We don't engage people like that. We don't like shenanigans, and there have been shenanigans in the 7th Congressional District. There have been some voter fraud in Greene County in the last cycle. Several people went to jail on voter fraud. The United States Justice Department has already been called and asked to monitor boxes. You know, dead people vote in Alabama. They have been called in. The Secretary of State is already on top of this. You know, so it's a different world, but it's a great world. We love Alabama. This is a Michigan girl whose parents raised her in two states, and I thank God for Alabama. Certainly, Catherine, thank God for Michigan. Prepare me to be as tough as I am, being the Genesee County Democrat that I was. And the two have come together with a great leadership mix, and I just need some help to help my folks here to get the service. For so long, Alabama leadership has been not the leadership, not the tough leadership. And I'm a little bit different because I do come from two different worlds in life. But it's worked here. The people are embracing my leadership style, and they know I'm a tough cookie, and I'm still, I got a little southern bell in me every blue moon. But when it's time to really get up and roll her sleeves up, Sheila Smoot, on your side. I've been on the side of the people. They know me here, Catherine, Tim, and Dave. They know me, and they know I'm going to get the job done, and I'm not going to turn my back on them. I'm going to not let these folks down. It's just not in my spirit. I wasn't raised that way. It's not in my blood, and that may not be the political answer that everybody wants and the polished answer that everybody seeks, but it's from my heart, and it's our time. It's our time, so we're prepared, and we're prepared to lead. So, folks, SmootForCongress.com, SmootForCongress.com. If you want to talk to me personally, I do return calls. Area code 205-326-9811, 205-326-9811. Call me. Leave me your name, your number, your state, your issue, and I'll call you back. And, again, send water and gasoline money. We need it. We're going to win in 2010. We're excited. We hope you are, too.
Yes. Well, thanks again, Ms. Smoot, for being on with us.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good to have Ms. Smoot on. And with it, that election coming up Tuesday, very topical. I think we're going to have a little more Alabama politics any minute. But before we get there, Texas had a poll on their governor's race, and it showed Rick Perry over 50%. And all we heard about from the folks at Burnt Orange Report and every other source we read about, and I believe them, that everybody in Texas is sick of Rick Perry. How can this guy be over 50%, Tim?
Tea parties, I think. I thought maybe this Tea Party thing's a little stronger than people think. Rick Perry was in trouble last year. Then he makes this speech to this Tea Party bunch where he goes to talking about secession. You guys remember that? All of a sudden, his poll numbers took off against Kay Bailey Hutchison. This guy has somehow been able to run against the government, and he's the governor. it's remarkable to see. And there's another thing, too. We know the recent political history of Texas, guys. There's not a statewide elected Democrat down there. It's tough sledding for the Democrats right now, and that's unfortunate too, because this time we cannot say we do not have a good candidate for governor down there. He's probably the best candidate that they could have come up with.
Yeah,
Mayor White's great. He's a great candidate, but it's a Republican state and a Republican year, I'm afraid.
In 28 days' time, this race went from 48 Perry, 44 White, to 51 Perry, 38 White. White dropped 6 points, and Perry picked up 3. That's a 9-point net gain for Perry. I mean, and it seems like the dynamics will be pretty similar from April to May. We got to find out more about that. But like I said, we're going to talk a lot of Alabama politics tonight since their elections are 3 days away. And Martin Weinberg has joined us once again. To talk about all the races in Alabama. Welcome, Martin.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Doing good. Martin, I guess right off, everyone wants to know about that governor's race because that's got some players that really have a profile outside of just Alabama for good or bad. I know Artur Davis has made a mark on the around the country, and so has Roy Moore for starters. But kind of give us the Republican side of that governor's race first.
Yeah, that's a wild race. We've got, I think there's 6 or 7 candidates. Only a couple of, I guess at this point, legitimate candidates that are polling with a chance to go into a runoff. I think there will definitely be a runoff. Bradley Byrne, who is former Democratic state senator and Clinton supporter, turned Republican. He is the head of the two-year college system, which he got a lot of publicity for that, for pointing out the corruption. He is being considered the leading candidate for some time. But now you have Tim James with those crazy English-only commercials. And I don't know if y'all probably heard about those or seen those, where he says he wants to get rid of the driver's license test in 12 languages and that sort of thing. He's been coming on strong. He's been running a lot of media. And then you've got Roy Moore, who he could always sneak into a runoff, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he hadn't done a lot in this race, but he's got that 100% name recognition, which I like to call it, that, I guess all three of those guys probably have 100% name recognition by now with all the ads and stuff they've run. But those are the three leading candidates, and then you've got a couple other folks that are polling pretty far behind.
Yeah, so a lot of candidates. That probably will be a runoff, correct?
Yeah, I can't imagine that it would. I mean, with that many in there, I see nobody getting much more than 30%. I'll be shocked if he might get some more than the mid-30s. And I think Byrne will probably be first, and then, James and Moore will battle. I think Tim James has got the upper hand just because he's been out there campaigning. He's had more ads, but you never can count out Roy Moore.
Well, and my question, Alabama's a conservative state. This seems like an incredibly conservative year for Republicans all across the country. Could it be that this real Bradley Byrne attack that's been coming out lately of saying Bradley Byrne used to be a Democrat, endorsed President Clinton, he's this, that, and the other, because he's probably just more middle of the road for Republican, is there a way that his support just falls apart and the two conservative candidates both pass him?
I don't know. I would have thought that would have happened, but his numbers have dropped. And they had the whole, kind of a playoff Texas textbook situation with some things Byrne had said, where he had, said he doesn't, believe in evolution, that sort of thing at all. I guess they did go to that. But I think the focus has more so been on, James and Byrne. Roy Moore, he hadn't bought a lot of ads. I don't know if I hadn't seen him on TV. And, Tim James came almost out of nowhere, based on the numbers. I mean, he ran for governor, I think, 8 years ago. I don't know if he ran 4 years – 8 years ago when you had Riley in his first term running against Lieutenant Governor Windham. And James only got 10%. And I think, just all that money, I don't know if he wouldn't have had these crazy ads, these controversial ads, that he would have even been a player in the race, because I mean, you had some polls that showed, I guess Dr. Bentley, he's like fourth or fifth now, but they were showing him at one time second or third, just because he got out there early, and Tim James was way back there. So I think the emergence of James and then Byrne just kind of been in the mix the whole time. He's got that establishment, type support that I can't see it being anything but the two of them, but I could be wrong. I mean, I think if anything, Moore would knock off James. I don't think James and Moore would both knock off Byrne to get in the runoff.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to pass this thing to Tim to ask about the Democratic side or anything else he wants to ask about.
Well, yeah, I did have a question about the Democratic side. Representative Davis, of course, made national news when he voted against the health care bill,
sure,
especially since he was such an early supporter of Barack Obama. Has that vote helped him, hurt him, or made no difference to his candidacy in the primary?
It's definitely hurt him in the primary because he's lost a lot of his support in the African-American community. He lost, there's a few major black political organizations that, Davis said, I'm not going to go after their endorsement, because he knew, in my opinion, that he wasn't going to get the endorsement. So it's kind of a political play. I think had he voted yes, I think that he would he would have beaten Sparks, Ron Sparks, the agriculture commissioner, by 20, 25 points, if not more. I think it's hurt him that much. I mean, I think it's a whole combination of things, the way he's ran his campaign since that vote. And I can't say that's the only thing. I mean, he's had some staff shakeups, several, you know, with his polling and consultants. And he lost a key staffer, you know, my understanding, too. Well, he left the Davis team, you know, back in January, I think, but he might be working with Sparks now. So, I mean, a lot of people that were on the Davis side, you know, after that vote, I mean, it really put them in a bad position. You know, I was talking to some supporters. They were trying to fundraise for him. And after that vote came out, you know, nobody really wanted to be associated with him. It really drove him from that base. I mean, I think we'll see. I mean, Sparks has, you know, got a lot more money come in after that from groups around the state that do not want to see Davis at the top of that ticket, you know, for various reasons. I mean, it's kind of interesting because Davis is running a lot farther to the right than Sparks on a number of issues. You know, you know, Sparks said he supported health care. Of course, he didn't have the vote, and Davis said there's some question. You know, Ron Sparks, you said you didn't support health care to a business forum, and then you come out and say you do. You know, I think in a debate, I've seen them debate a few times. I mean, Davis is a much better debater, but I think Sparks right now has the momentum because of the way Davis has run his campaign and the health care vote. I mean, I think there are a number of votes that a lot of the more progressive voters in the state are not happy with Davis on. It wasn't just that. But I think it's been his whole voting pattern. He was the only member of the Congressional Black Caucus that voted against the health care reform. And you know, so Sparks got a lot of the internal, you know, I would call popular, persuasive African-American leaders in the state. Don Siegelman, the former governor, just released a statement saying he's supporting Ron Sparks, and they this morning. So I just got an email saying that, which I don't know how much difference that'll make, but Siegelman's still popular, so despite being a convicted felon. I mean, people think that was a political prosecution. So it's very interesting, and we'll see what happens on Tuesday. But a lot of people are thinking now that Sparks might be able to pull it off.
Without there wouldn't be a runoff.
And
no,
speaking
there's only the two of them in the – there wouldn't be a runoff because there's only the two of them in the race.
So and speaking of what might happen to someone Tuesday, obviously Democrats around the country are interested in one of your congressional races featuring a certain congressman by the name of Griffith. And the question is straightforward and simple. Are the Republicans going to take care of this guy on Tuesday, or is he going to survive?
I don't know. I mean, that race is with all the developments in the congressional race. It seems like the Democratic primary has gotten some more interest lately than the Republicans. I mean, I don't even know what. I mean, there is three people in the race. You've got Griffith, and he's got Mo Brooks, a former. I think I don't know if he's still a county commissioner, a former county commissioner from up in Huntsville, who's gotten a lot of endorsements from. A lot of the Republican groups up there. And then a guy even farther to the right, a guy named Les Phillip, that has raised a lot of money, but it's been one of those, I can't think of the name of the group, but it's one of those groups where they raise all this money and just, you know, send it back to the, it's happened in Georgia. I think there was somebody that ran against Hank Johnson that maybe did it where they spend all this money, almost like one of those things. Y'all might be familiar with that. I can't think of the name of the groups, but he's spent a lot of money. But I don't know that any of it's been effective. So, you know, it could be Griffith and Brooks in a runoff. I don't know how many, you know, points that guy will get. Nothing will surprise me. I mean, I hadn't been following it up as closely as I have a lot of the other races just because the governor race has been so high profile. But, you know, either way, I think Griffith's going to have trouble now and in the fall if he makes it through Tuesday.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Catherine?
Yeah, I just want to go back to Archer Davis for a second. Do we know why he changed his position on health care? Like, is he given any kind of good explanation for it?
Well, you know, I don't know that he has necessarily changed it. I mean, my understanding is that he came out, you know, fairly early before the vote. I mean, you know, I know he had some forms and stuff where he's uncommitted, and he was soliciting support from – you know, the community to come out and listen and hear what some of the experts from different parts of the healthcare industry and healthcare field thought. But before the vote, I mean, it was probably a month or two before the vote, I guess when they had that recess, he said, I'm not going to support the bill. And, you know, he was taking a lot of flack for that, but I don't think, you know, people may have expected him to change, say, I'm going to support. I don't think anybody ever really knew what he, you know, despite him saying I'm not going to support it. I mean, he's pretty true to his word from my experiences in watching him and knowing him in terms of if he's going to vote for something. And so I don't know, but he didn't offer another solution, and it just, you know, he talked about the cost to the small businesses and the taxes and that sort of thing. And, you know, but you look at the 7th Congressional District, and as Sheila Smoot, who was on earlier, said, I mean, it's one of the poorest districts in the country. And, you know, I think that really just, you know, got people off on his team, you know, and people that support him, because you look at, you're right now, you're a member of the 7th Congressional, you're a congressman, you're not a governor, you're not a governor's candidate when you're making this vote, you're a congressman, and I think that's really what got people.
Well, and also to be the only one to go against the support, the, you know, Congressional Black Caucus is quite,
right.
You know, it's quite a dramatic, you know, action to take, considering, especially if you don't have anything else to offer as a solution,
right,
to the healthcare crisis. I just wondered if there was any. It seems odd that he would not support it. But, well, I don't really have any more questions. David and Tim really covered it pretty well. Is there anything? Are there any other races that we haven't asked you about that you think are?
Can I jump in here, Martin? Catherine has it wrong. There's the most important, you know, candidate in race in all of America. Forget Alabama. Dale Peterson, who's running for agriculture commissioner. I mean, if you're a fan of 90 transitions and like a 60-second ad, I mean, you got to love Dale Peterson. Is this guy going to win?
I have no idea. I think that he could get in a runoff. There's three people in that race. And I mean, that ad has not only gotten attention in Alabama or the South. I mean, that's gotten national attention. I mean, I would imagine there's several million hits on that. They did a parody ad that is hilarious. I don't know if y'all seen that. It's called I can't think of the name of it, but I mean, they've got this guy. He's on the horse, and I mean, it's one of the greatest parody videos I've ever seen. And that
my
just
video
play
editor's on crack, maybe.
Yeah,
I did hear some theories that one theory was the guy couldn't actually complete a sentence, and they had to edit it just so it would be coherent. That was one theory.
I never even heard of him until I see him on that commercial. I still don't know where he comes from or what he's doing. So I have no idea. You know, I mean, I think if he wins, it's just completely kind of a fluke off that ad. I mean, I would say that. I mean, he definitely is an underfunded candidate there, but he could sneak into the runoff. So we'll see.
Yeah, that was just crazy. I mean, and you get the idea that it's almost become such a, you know, kind of a funny thing that you know, he may actually sneak in against some other candidates who may be considered weaker. One of the guys he's running against is in this camo outfit that just looks embarrassing. I mean, Michael Dukakis looks like, you know, Rambo compared to this guy in his camo outfit.
Yeah, I mean, this has been one of the most entertaining cycles in Alabama. And I mean, it's always like this in terms of the different dynamics, but in terms of the political ads, I mean, I've never seen anything like this with the Tim James ad, Dale Peterson, and there have been some crazy, you know, local, you know, state legislature ads, I mean, that have been comparing folks to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. And I've seen that at congressional level, but never at the state legislative level. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on Tuesday for sure.
Yeah, well, Martin, thanks again for coming on, and we'll maybe have you on between the now and the runoff, because we know some of these races will get there, and certainly for the general.
I would expect a number of runoffs, so I'd be glad to come back on and talk about it, and certainly before the general. And I love the show, and thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Yeah, well, I mean, I tell you what, this hour flew by, and this may be a kudzu vine first. We have had a whole show, filled it up with some great guests and great information, and I don't believe we've talked about one single solitary Georgia topic. Is that a first for us?
It probably is, yeah.
Well, I just want to say one more thing. I just want to thank all our all the people who serve in our armed forces on this Memorial Day. We appreciate all their work and the commitment that they make. And it's, you know, one of the few times in the year that we can really recognize them. And I appreciate all that.
I'll second that. Yeah.
Amen.
Well, it's been a great show, and we're going to watch Alabama elections, among other things, come back next week. And we will get to some of these Georgia polls we didn't get to this week, but it's been the Kudzu Vine for Memorial Day weekend.
Thanks,
guys. Good night.
Night.